Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz from the Science of Psychotherapy, and I'm here with Richard Hill. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Matt. Here I am.
Welcome home.
Yes, after a fabulous and exciting trip through Europe, I've just returned. I'm kind of including a few aeroplane stopovers. I went to 14 different countries.
Wow.
14, for God's sake. It was fabulous. But we delivered presentations and things in five, so that was great.
And that's why it was so hard to pin you down. I did apologize last week that we did try to get together and
do a
show. And it was all Richard's fault because he's gallivanting around the globe. But yes. Glad to have you back.
It's really good. And I know we'll have a talk about this in a podcast coming up, because I think there's some interesting things to say just about describing European psychotherapy and psychology and neuroscience and what's happening in Portugal and international activities and London and Germany and, goodness gracious me, Bulgaria, which was absolutely solution-focused with great heights. So lots of things to be nice to just let people know. Just a quick podcast on, but it might be fun.
All right. Well, we must have that conversation.
Do that soon.
But today we have another couple of guests. We've got Diana Foscher from New York, and we're going to be talking to her about her AEDP. And she has someone here in Australia, Marion Swettenham. She's from Canberra. And Marion is very interested in bringing AEDP into Australia in a much bigger way. And so we'll get into that conversation. That's very interesting.
Yeah, because that's great, because I saw Diana, I probably saw her 10 years ago in my trips to America, but over here, if I just based on over here, I probably wouldn't have heard of her. So I think this is great. Is it brand new when they're just tinkering around? No, this is well-established long-term stuff, and it's really good. Yeah, I really like it.
Well, yeah. We've had some writings from her in The Neuropsychotherapist way back a few. Well, I'll put some links in the show notes to a feature article that she wrote for us a few years ago.
Great, great. Let's get ourselves up to speed. And I'm looking forward to talk, because I haven't actually met her. I've just seen her talk, so this would be great.
Okay, now before we jump into that, I just wanted to mention our academy, the Science of Psychotherapy Academy, and we've been hard at work developing these little courses for you all. And one of the most recent things that we've been developing is with Dr. Dave from Shrink Wrap Radio fame. He's got a wealth of many, many years of interviews with all of these different experts in our field. And so we've collaborated with Dr. Dave, and he's going to start producing these courses where we'll take a topic and he'll just pull little bits out of, you know, archive of interviews, which is going to be absolutely brilliant. And we've got the first one up for you to look at right now, and that's on PTSD. And so he's got people like Bessel van der Kolk that he's talked to.
Which is fantastic. And I love this because, I mean, even with our podcasts, not every second of it is fascinating. I mean, some of it's conversational. Mm. And he's just got in and distilled out the really meaty, great stuff, the high points, the things you can take away with you, it's a really terrific, little program, and we're really grateful to Dr. Dave to turning around and finding this and distilling this interesting work for us. I love it.
That's right. So the first one is it's 1.5 hours of study for you. There's some audio recordings, there's some video to watch, there's some questions to answer, and you get a certificate at the end. And speaking about certificates, let me just remind you also that we do have our larger certificates for 25, 50, 100 hours, whatever you've done with our course material. And we present that, you know, in this beautiful printed certificate that you can put up in your office to show that you've been keeping up to date with the science of psychotherapy.
And we find almost all associations are very receptive to our certificates.
Absolutely.
So that's fantastic. Okay, now we better get on, or otherwise the hour will be up. Where are we going, Matt? We're going to Diana and Marion.
Yes. So we're going to be in Brisbane, Sydney, Canberra, and New York. So let's go there.
Fantastic.
Hi, Diana, and hi, Marion. Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. How are you both?
A pleasure to be with you. Greetings from New York.
Yes, fantastic.
Yes, and hello here from Sydney.
And Marion, you're in Canberra. Yes, wonderful. Now, today we're going to talk about AEDP. Now, for those who don't know what AEDP is, I'm wondering, Diana, could you just give us a brief intro into what this therapeutic practice is all about?
With pleasure. And it's fun to be talking with you and honored to talk to your participants or listeners or viewers, right? I have to get our cyber language right here. So AEDP is really multifaceted, but let me focus on just a couple of things that I think might get us started. Yeah. And one is that from the get-go, it focuses on the healing within, right? So that the idea is, whether you call it healing, whether you call it positive neuroplasticity, the idea is that psychotherapy doesn't lead to healing only, hopefully it does, but that it's really something that's wired into us that also has manifestations in subtle and sometimes not so subtle affective measures. And if we track those carefully and work with them, they're marked by positive affect, and we can start sort of accessing the healing truly from the get-go. So that's, I think, a huge thing that I think it's a thread that runs through the whole thing. The other piece, and I'm going to name two other pieces, is this kind of central element of undoing aloneness. The first really connects with neuroscience, with neuroplasticity specifically, but the second, whether it's attachment or intersubjectivity, it's a fundamental sense that psychopathology arises when people are alone and can't process what they have to deal with. Okay. So it has a very simple consequence for the therapist. The therapist's job, first and foremost, is to undo aloneness, right? So from there comes like a whole panoply of relational interventions.
Right.
And the third is that we process negative emotions and positive emotions equally. We side by side. The negative emotions of trauma and depression, anxiety, what have you, side by side with positive emotions of connection, joy. So how's that for, like...
That's beautiful. Now, this is quite quite mature in the development of this approach. You've been around for a while with this approach, haven't you?
It is 20 years since the publication of my book, and I'm very fond of saying that in 2000, there was a 180p practitioner. So okay, we're 20 years from that.
Because I was wondering how is this accepted in the U.S. in terms of... in context with a whole lot of other different approaches?
You know, it is so interesting because ours has been sort of like a grassroots approach.
Okay.
So, you know, Marion is not from the U.S., but has been very much in our training. You can speak a little bit. It's a very self-selected group of people. People find us rather than are looking for, and it's really growing, and it's growing in the U.S., and worldwide. So that's on one side. I think it's becoming increasingly accepted by those who pay attention.
Okay.
I think one of the things as I listen to it, and I've known about it for some time, and I've been developing my understanding of therapy stuff over time. But one of the big things I'm talking about now is a return to naturalness, which is one of the words that you could generalize used over there. You're saying finding inner self-healing or natural healing processes, using things like a returning relationship. People say, oh, gee, that's a novel idea. And you go, no, that's how human beings have been for the vast majority of time. So it's because also the thing that you addressed in my awareness of it was, what have we lost and how can we put it back, rather than what is some magic new idea that no one ever thought of before? And to some extent, therapeutic practice really has not been, it's natural. It's been about what can we put back into these people to make them better. And ADP's always been, what can we bring back to people that is comforting and strengthening to them? And that's what attracted me to the ideas of it early on.
I love that formulation. I think it's a lovely way, you know, to talk about it. And it's, you know, what are we bringing back? But really, what are we fostering? But it very much has to do with, like, wired in capacities for connection, for healing, for self-repair, for growing. They're there. You don't have to, like, teach them to people.
Yeah, we'd all, if not, like an immune system. If we didn't have the immune system for health and the immune system for mental health, we wouldn't have a species.
We wouldn't be having this conversation. Karen, I don't know if you want to add anything just from your experience.
Yeah.
Look, I think, well, from my experience, yeah, I came across ADP when I was reading your book, and if I backtrack a bit, I mean, I trained in the cognitive behavioral tradition, and I was seeking something more, psychodynamic. So I did the long form of psychodynamic therapy. And yes, there's also an awareness, and because I work in a system where we have an insurer who will give us 10 sessions a year to do therapy with clients. So long-term therapy didn't fit. And when I was reading about AEDP, first thinking about it from a short-term perspective, but I think the thing that I think really resonated for me, there's many things that resonated, was this is a relational therapy. It's not the still-faced therapies that can be there, which are very dysregulating. And when I was reading that, I thought, of course, that makes sense. But I think the other part that was also, that really spoke to me was that, we all have this capacity to self-heal. And that we've just got to find that daisy in the concrete, sort of that aliveness, and just help to grow that. And that then we can heal the trauma. And so that shifted the way I worked with people. I started to look, the triangle of looking at defense, anxiety, core affect became a schema that I sort of held in my mind, and it just helped me to navigate in a more sort of thoughtful and also more affect a real way to bring about transformation, bring about healing. I went and did the training. I was amazed, and even doing it in its very clunky form as I was when I started, I was amazed at what was coming up with clients and what movement I was getting. So,
yeah, that's really beautiful. I mean, a lot of this stuff both of you discuss extensively on your websites. There's some nice, I know, Marin, you're talking about your history with psychodynamics and CBT and so on and so forth. And we'll have those links on the, so everybody listening, go to the websites and expand the discussion there. So it's very good. Just drop that one in, Matt, that was all.
Yeah. So Marian, you're now wanting to introduce AEDP into Australia in a much bigger way than it is at the moment. So tell us a little bit about that journey.
All right. Well, I work with, I've got two other colleagues who are, who have also been doing the same training as I have. There's Myra Whitney and Juanita Coleridge and myself, who we meet every fortnight. We share videos. We travel to the US, and we've been traveling to the US every couple of years, and we just thought, you know, it would be really good to bring the speakers to Australia. But also what's happening within our own practices is that we all individually supervise early career psychologists and counsellors, and they're learning about AEDP and they're wanting to find more. And in fact, I'm now getting people contact me because they want to, they're more hungry for emotion-focused or affect-focused therapies. So,
yeah, Marion, just give us also a little bit of background here about psychodynamic therapies, AEDP, and in terms of, you know, evidence base and what we were talking about before the show started about insurers, government rebating, that sort of thing.
I think, look, to begin with, and certainly in Australia, Medicare is the system that can give clients a rebate on their sessions for up to 10 sessions in a calendar year. And up until recently, the only therapies that were allowed to be provided under that model was CBT, DBT, ACT, and so there was sort of clinicians were feeling a bit anxious about doing anything outside of that because they would be that this could be a problem for them. Anyway, there has since just last year was a big literature review which just put onto the of all the evidence-based therapies, and which included EFT, short-term dynamic psychotherapy, and I thought, right, if these are on the list, AEDP would fit and could be on that list too. And so that sort of had me thinking, well, look, you know, there's people are feeling more relaxed about going into that space to learn therapies that for many of them was what drove them to become psychologists or counsellors in the first place. They want to do the deep work.
Now, just because Diana, in America, it's a different system. Now, we have universal health care and we have subsidized health care. In America, it's more insurance based. And so, how's AEDP looked at and covered by the various insurance people over there?
Yeah, let me sort of like back up a little bit because, you know, one of the things that's new is that, and I hope that by the time I do come to Australia in 2020, it will we will have a lot of empirically validated data out there where we've been doing an outcome study of 16-session psychotherapy.
Yeah.
And to date, we have more than 50. I think we might already have more than 60 dyads who have completed the 16 sessions of therapy, and we have a 6-month follow-up and 1-year follow-up, which is sort of standard in the empirically validated treatments. And we are getting really wonderful results, and we've constructed our study to be able to do what's called benchmarking, which to be able to compare it with Les Greenberg's EFT for depression and CBT.
Right.
And we are literally working on our first paper to outcome results, and particularly with depression, but really with many, many conditions across the board, we're getting splendid results. So that's a very encouraging. And it's nice to now have the sort of the empirical bit.
Yeah, and you've just got to get it on paper. I mean, obviously, the experiential, anecdotal, personal experience is long for, as I say, I've been listening to you for ages, but you have to get it on paper. And so well done. Well done. Wonderful.
Thank you. Because we've had the clinical and we've had the theoretical. Mm-hmm. And now I think we're completing the third leg of that triangle I've just made up, which is the research component. So I hope by 2021 to have a couple of papers out there.
And when you say made up, I don't want to diminish it too much. It's just a succinct articulation that carries across the understanding between brains, you know, it's across that synaptic space of the social synaptic space. Yeah. It's a nice triangle. I like it.
This hard work of validating, you know, what you know intuitively is and what you know in practice is a good therapy is so important, especially for systems like we have in Australia, you know, to be able to open doors so that it can be brought under the umbrella of something that is legitimate for rebate.
Right. And I think that has been, that sort of goes back to a little bit to one of your earlier questions. You know, I think that is a question in academia, you know,
right.
Academic departments with respect to clinical methods. Though I don't know what study you were referencing, Marion, but there's so many challenges of the so-called empirically validated treatments that it's a bit of a renaissance for more complex therapies. And let me just say one other thing about it, that most psychotherapy outcome studies are done either in university clinics where you have graduate students, or they're, you know, they're done with grants in outpatient clinics of like major hospitals or so on and so forth. Our study is completely naturalistic in that we use private practitioners. We have right. done it without money, not a single cent. And it says something about the spiritness of the ADP community, that people are really volunteering their time. And because we standardly videotape our psychotherapy sessions, and all our ADP trained or people training in ADP have like a video camera, you know, here I can turn mine. It's right over here on my desk. You know, because of that, we're able to not just have the scales data, but we also have at this point this incredible treasure trove of psychotherapy videotapes, multiply 16 by 60. You know, that's going to be a rich resource for people to really study for years to come, not just the outcome once we establish that, but also the process, what really happens. And I think that's the sort of exciting part, because like we have theories, and clearly the application of the theory to the model works, because clinicians are saying, wow, and look what's happening with my clients. But to also be able to apply the scientific or that kind of investigative perspective and inquire, what are really the change mechanisms responsible for change?
What's the role of relationship?
What's the role of focusing on affect? What's the role of metaprocessing? So it's exciting stuff.
So there's two things that people listening might be interested in. I'm just sort of thinking of myself as, I don't know anything about AEDP. What would I want to know? I'd kind of be interested to know. I go and do the training. What's some of the processes in training, so the time frame, and perhaps, you know, getting up to qualification. And the other thing I'd like to know, assuming I'm trained, what are some of the things that I would be doing? What are some of the early stages? Just a bit of an insight of okay, you're AEDP trained. A client comes in, these are the first few things, or these are some of the things that we say. I'm not wanting to constrain you to a rigid framework, but just to give me an idea, if I'm thinking of becoming an AEDP practitioner coming to this conference, are there some things that would be neat to tell me to give me an incentive and a sense of it?
Sure, I'd love to. And again, Marion, I invite you to join me. You're sort of like fresh in it right now. But I think so one of the first things really is from the beginning to focus on something, again, big or small, that the person is doing as they're sitting down that touches you, the therapist, as moving or as inspiring. I mean, they're coming in shame and defeat and hopelessness and trauma and whatever it is, that they're not coming because life is hunky-dory. They're coming with some tremendous distress or shame or what is, and to somehow just say, wow, I'm really struck by how compassionate you are towards their why, or I'm really struck by how clear you are, or I'm moved by your story. And that to have this happen from the first 10 minutes you know, to make this kind of contact. I think that's one of the exciting things, you know, but that's one of the sort of things that I think is the mark of engaging, really engaging in the beginning. I think the other is giving your, and I think Marion referenced that by saying this is not a still-based therapy. We're so informed by developmental work and by the work in attachment that, you know, at least for some, this involves some unlearning of the still phase and of the neutrality and of working hard to, as a therapist, sort of hide your emotions or keep them zipped up. So now, of course, it has to be boundaried and rigorous and so on and so forth. It's not anything goes. But the therapist response, affective response, is a tool. It's a huge tool, both for tracking, but also for responding. So I was just, what I was doing in the hour before I came to you for us to meet, I was working with a very, very avoidant man, you know, who is sort of melting a little bit, and some of the suffering that he's actually feeling is not just depression, but he's actually starting to feel the suffering. And the work was with my empathy.
Yeah, right.
So that's also something that just retraining that in, just by being human and compassionate, along with a myriad experiential techniques.
I mean, you've already said, Marion, how that is sort of attracted you. And, you know, what does that feel like? As like after doing the psychodynamic work and some of the CBT where it's all a little bit more formalized, for you, I can see it was attracted by the feeling, but can you describe it at all?
I think often when you're in the, whether it's a CBT or psychodynamic, you're in your left brain a lot. You're thinking ahead, you're analyzing, and a lot of that attention sort of takes away from sort of what's unfolding moment to moment. And in a way, it was a quite freeing exercise to just be able to just track with and sort of hold to the side all those other left brain wonderings and analyses that want to happen. But I think for me, what was also was new was really to work with what was happening as a response in my body. And because I could pick up some tension come up when they talked about something that was quite troubling, and I could just check in with them. I'm wondering, what are you noticing in your body? Sure enough, there was a similar kind of tension. We could just work at the somatic level for a while, quieten that down. And there would be a shift in their approach, or in their response, there'd be a sort of a lightening that would happen. And so I found, in a way, it freed me up in a way. Therapy can be quite energizing, as opposed to sort of getting to the end of the day feeling spent. But can I say something else about the training? Because I think
it's
really important. Because
absolutely.
I've been to lots and lots of trainings where it's lecture style. And so you hear lots of research, you hear a lot of descriptions about what's done, and they tell you what great results they're getting. And, you know, there are times you think, yeah, that sounds good, but how am I going to make that, translate that into my practice? What I loved about the immersion was Diana would show the videos, but she would slow them down. She would stop them and she would say, notice what's happening here. And she would start to unpack what transformance was happening or what sort of defenses were coming up and how she would get under them. And it was like, okay. And also the other part was when you would see the sort of the lift in the client's mood, she could tell us that without the video, and I'd think, oh, yeah, okay. But the video doesn't lie. And I think that was so powerful. And that the subsequent trainings, the videos again were rich material that were really instructive. And then in the ES1, the Essential Skills 1 and Essential Skills 2, there's a whole afternoon devoted to small group training where you're in a group of three and you eat, there's a coach for each and you're getting intensive supervision while you're practicing. You don't get that in any other training. It was sort of like, yeah, I'm willingly investing in this because I'm walking away with a skill that gets embedded in me that I can then carry on in my private practice. So,
yeah. Yes, I've been lucky enough to attend some lectures without having done the training with Diana, and it's exactly that. In fact, I think what interested me was either at the same conference or a similar one, Pat Ogden was doing the very same sort of thing with the process of looking at a video and describing it. And there was a lot of similarity. So I sort of was thinking when I was watching Diana, I thought, yeah, here's a therapy that's not neck up. Mm-hmm. And it actually has a lot of somatic nature to it, which is what attracted me a great deal too. Sorry, Matt, it was just a reflection.
No. So on that point too, that this isn't, you know, like an intellectual thing. You know, we're talking about right brain, you know, affective attunement, and I'm imagining that this also, you know, what about personalities, the personality of the therapist, because it's not just a rote protocol that you're running through. This has very much to do with your own personality. And so when it comes to training people, is it for everybody, or do you need to be a certain type of person to really get into this right affective attuned place?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. You know, first of all, so far we're operating by self-selection.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People come to the trainings who are drawn. Nobody's forced to learn it or practice it in a clinic, you know, that sort of abides by this model. Having said that, because we're so informed and influenced by attachment, you know, mothering or parenting is not limited to a particular personality style.
True.
Right? And there's something about helping each dyad develop their own way, I would say. In a way that can sort of like ring true, right? Within limits, obviously. You know, I think you have to be out there. You have to be willing to take some risks and be vulnerable. You don't sort of sit behind the facade. You're not taking notes. So people have to be sufficiently comfortable. But I don't think there's a particular personality that's required. And one of the things that, again, I think Marion might say from her own experience is that our faculty members, for instance, we have a faculty of 20 people and, you know, more certified. The 20 of us are very, very different in our personality styles.
Right.
And we're all doing ADP, but it doesn't look like a manualized treatment. Once you get in the treatment, you understand why everybody's doing ADP. But moment to moment, the therapies reflect me when I'm doing it and so-and-so when he is, not to speak of then the interaction with the dyad. So I would not say that you need a particularly warm, super effusive.
I'm getting the feeling that actually what one of the main components is a connection to your humanity, connected to your humanness.
That's what I was going to say. This naturalness, to be authentically you, more so than in another technique where you have to be maybe a bit more of a blank, you know, page.
Or some things where you need to be highly technically attuned. There are things, going back, I've already said it before, this is what I love. I'm always attracted to things that promote humanness and naturalness, mm-hmm. and just utilizing each other to get back the dyad, as you're saying so beautifully, Diana, so simply, to get us back to a state where we can find our own capacities. It's not surprising in the world that we live in, which one of the arguments, I love, a friend of mine wrote a book, and he's got about DNA, and he said our DNA is like a very annoyed teenager that doesn't like the room it's in. And I think that's kind of true of our mental health as well. It says, I'd like to be mentally healthy, but gee whiz, I live in this very strange invented society, which I'm not used to for the, you know, over the last 200,000 years. So it's this rediscovering and reintroducing these things through your own heart, not through some kind of technique.
And body and capacity to connect. I mean, I liken it in a way to talent. You know, you can be musical, and that's a talent. And then it has to be trained, because you're not sort of going and sort of plopping your hands on the piano keys and out comes a Beethoven sonata. It requires an enormous amount of training and guidance. But I think that the parallel to what's natural, we try to tap into it and really bring it forth. And then it is that which becomes sort of shaped and trained and skills and a whole phenomenology of what, you know, again, Marianne talks a little bit about the triangle that sort of guides the work. So I think you put your finger on the fundamentals, and in the training, we do the rest.
I love it. Like a good jazz pianist, they're fabulous technicians, but then they're able to improvise. It's beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly the metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you were saying. Yeah,
Okay, Richard, so, I'm very conscious of the
Matt,
time.
Yeah.
We have to run off and do other things. So, Marianne, is there any last words you'd like to leave us with?
Oh, look, we're just in the very beginning stages of developing up a community in Australia. My goal or our hope is that we can bring the immersion and the ES1, Essential Skills 1 and 2 to Australia. But before that happens, Diana's very kindly offered to do a workshop on the east coast of Australia after her west coast keynote. And
wonderful.
We're in the throes of trying to make that happen.
And that's hopefully next year. Yeah. And don't worry, Diana. It's just a short hop of, you know, 14 hours on an aeroplane, and it's really good because I love going over to the West Coast and doing what I can. And so when you come, if you're around, Matt and I have a chance. We'll get together with you all and make sure that you're very welcome. But we'll put all the bits and. We'll put all those connections and all those things on the page, won't we, Matt?
For
the
Absolutely. We'll put all of those links on the show notes. Diana, anything final you'd like to leave us with before we finish up?
I think I'm so looking forward to actually coming to Australia and just experiencing the participants and really sharing the work. It will be a new continent for me.
Oh, wonderful.
We have a koala waiting for you.
Marianne, Diana, thank you so much for being here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. And Diana, we're looking forward to seeing you next year when you do come out.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, that's fantastic. There we go. That's Diana. I finally met her properly, and that's the sort of stuff that I was listening to 10 years ago, and here it is. It's still vital, and in fact, look at that study they're doing. It's even more validated and more rich in its framework. So
yes.
2020.
Okay, so we will keep an eye on that, make sure we let you all know what's happening in terms of ADP and Diana and coming out to Australia and all of that. Yes, and Richard, isn't it encouraging to see that these sort of more right brain, implicit, affective, attuned kind of therapies, that's where they're sort of really couched, is becoming more accepted when we're talking about rebate systems, Medicare here in Australia, insurers in America.
Because to me, the of course, everybody knows client responsive is the key one of the elements. I must write a book on that. But I've been having various conversations, and this has been looked at in a favorable way in a financial group, so in a business area. There's also in an area to do with social work, where they're saying, "Well, we need to be more client responsive." And I'm going, "Well, I'm glad you asked." So this is exactly what's been going on in ADP for a long time, and we're getting an acceptance in the administration, now in the bureaucracy. Cool. Mm. Very cool.
Beautiful. Okay. So if you're interested in knowing more about AEDP, we'll put links in the show notes, and we'll put a link there to some articles and other things that we have on our website. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. Good to be back in sunny downtown wintry Oz. But
Yes,
but it was lovely.
Okay. And so next week, looking forward to catching up with you again, and we will have David Collins with us, and we're going to talk about teaching kids all about the brain.
Brain grow.
And
yeah.
Brain grow. Yes. And we'll be growing our brain.
All right.
Looking forward.
For now, see ya.
Okay. See you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.